Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
So we almost get to the airport. I pick him up, and it's like a 40-minute ride to the airport. And so I drop him off, and so we pull up to the curb. We find their gate, and you know that we pull up. We get the bags out of the car, and they look at me really strangely and almost like kind of angered. You know the way they're looking at me. And I put their bags on the curb, and then I say, "Wait a minute! I didn't say just the tip. I said just a tip. My eyes are up here, ladies." And I walked away. Can you believe that? Can't believe that happened.
I bet they left you a really positive review.
They did.
5 out of 5.
5 out of 5.
Would do again. Rip-roaring good time.
Rip-roaring great ride. Yes. You know?
If Van could leave reviews.
Got to get your mind out of the gutter here.
That's a hell of a lift ride, though, to the airport, 40 minutes. I wonder how often you get those long rides.
Well, it actually was 40 minutes. You know, and it was because some of the places that you go down here in Southwest Florida, and I know Yancey can attest to this too, there's no good way to get in or out anywhere. There's like one, like I took them from Fort Myers Beach to the airport, and there's one way in and one way out, and it's, you know, all the seasonal people are down here and they're leaving the beach, and it's basically like 40 minutes to go like 20 miles is what it boils down to.
Ah, one of those, sure.
Yeah. So
yeah, there's one in Chicago, one Uber ride that I had, this lady was very interesting to talk to. She was just a blast. But she was telling us about one unfortunate ride that she gave to this guy who apparently lacked in some hygiene. And she was telling us about this. She was like, "How do I describe this man without being too offensive?" And you're probably going to have to bleep this anyway. But she's like, he smelled like open ass.
Open. Oh, man. I like that. I'm going to use that.
Oh, that is amazing.
Oh, man. We laughed so hard. It was great. Speaking of which, welcome to the Nasty Cast, everybody. Episode 144. This is the top 50 starting pitchers episode featuring the great Al Melchior. I am Nathan Dokken, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. You can tweet me about all your favorite smells, or you could tweet at Van Lee.
At Manly Van Lee, even. You could tweet at Van Lee. Who knows what that guy's going to say?
Should I look that up?
Well, let's do it right now. Tweet at him.
Yeah. Hey, how are you? What's going on? I wonder if he exists. So, yeah,
you're like, dude, you're late for the podcast.
Confuse some poor man out there. Who just maybe he podcasts about soccer or something? You don't know.
We're about to find out.
But, I don't see just a Van Lee.
Maybe I should have gone with that one. I don't know. I kind of like how it rhymes. That's how it came about on Twitter. I am not Manly, just so you know, but my Twitter handle says I am.
I see a couple of Vanessa Lees.
Well, you can tweet at her and ask her why she's late for the podcast too.
Yeah. There you go.
Right, Ron Arigny.
Yes, sir. Hey, so Nate, I have a important question for you. I need your postal service expertise. I heard this story on the radio, and the first thing I thought of is I have to get how you would react in said situation, because you're a veteran, grizzled veteran of the postal grind, and I want to know how you would handle this. So I heard that there is a nudist colony north of Tampa, and what I heard about this nudist colony was that there were three mail carriers that kind of take this route on different days. And so the female mail carrier all the mailboxes are outside of the nudist colony, so she can just go by and put everybody's mail in there. However, if there's a big enough package, pun fully intended, she can't put it outside there, and so she has to go in the community. So since everybody is nude and tends to be a little bit older, she does not feel comfortable going into the nudist colony. Therefore, she will not take the packages inside. She will just leave them by the mailbox. So my question is, what would you do in that situation? Would you deliver them to the people, or would you leave them outside?
Oh, but I'm a man of the people, Ron. I would just strip naked.
Well, that's
strip
what
naked
I...
and walk right in there. All right, be one of the okay. one All of the right. crowd.
Whip awesome. Off those little male shorts as quick as you can.
That's right. Brandish my tighty whities with the Postal Service eagle on the butt.
Excellent.
That's what I wear to work every day, boys.
Love it.
Rain nor sleet nor snow or whatever that motto is.
The nor cream. Nudity.
Yeah, nor nudity, yes.
Nor nudity.
That's right.
All
nothing's
right.
Taking, nothing's slowing me down, baby.
Beautiful.
And you can tweet us about your crappy mailman at NastyCastBGFS. And Ron is at The Real Made. And Al, our guest of honor today, you can find at AlMelchiorBB on the Twitter.
When I was and a so, kid, my mom would sleep with my mailman, and that is not a joke. That is absolutely true.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was my friend's dad. His name was Brian. Yeah, crazy, crazy, crazy guy.
Well, you kind of have to be a special breed of crazy to deliver the mail.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, if you're listening out there, we want you. This picture me in that stupid poster in like the USA garb. We want you to podcast or well, yeah, kind of podcast with us next week, I guess. We're going to be doing a live mock draft. And if you want to partake in that, then let us know. It's going to be next Wednesday. I was hoping, I actually haven't even talked to you guys about this. So I was hoping maybe we could start an hour early next week, if that's possible.
Sure.
This isn't the first time in the last couple of weeks you haven't told us something, so we're getting used to it.
it's that need be. I'm just worried about it taking forever. So I would just like to start her. So anyway, it'll be next Wednesday at either 9 or 8 p.m. Eastern time. So if you are good to go during that time, get a hold of us on Twitter. Or maybe you can even send us an email, too, if you're not on Twitter. Van, what is the email address that people can get a hold of us at?
How about nastytraxpods@gmail.com? And the only interesting thing about that is it's like Fantrax, T-R-A-X, N-A-S-T-Y-T-R-A-X, pods@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. Or you can, of course, reach us at whatever our emails are. Mine is themanlyvanley@gmail.com.
And I'll never tell you my email address, you hoodlums. They'll be signing me up for all those newsletters.
It's because you hate email because you're a mailman and you still believe in snail mail. So you have this vendetta against the electronic mail.
So then if you give out your home address, they can actually mail you a letter saying they want to be in the podcast league.
There you go.
that's true.
Yeah, so there you go.
I don't want to give out my home address either because then everybody's going to be stealing my Wi-Fi. They're going to learn my Wi-Fi password, which is perfect cheese 292.
Pickle beer 69.
And as we will develop and let you know here in a little bit, Nate lives in an igloo.
That's true. But I got good Wi-Fi here, so that's all that matters. So by the way, please, if you are listening to us on iTunes or anywhere where you can leave a rate and review, and you like the show, please drop us a positive rate and review, and that will also get you entry into the 2018 Podcast League. We're taking entries for that now. So if you want to play against us in a real actual season long league, we got some spots yet available. So, send us, rate and review us, and then send us a screenshot of it either, through the email or on Twitter, and you can also donate to our Patreon account, patreon.com/nastypod, to get you a free copy of the 2018 Nasty Draft Guide and early access to some bonus positional preview podcasts. And also, we do a little podcast called Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, which is it's got its own feed now, so you can check it out pretty much anywhere, as far as I know, that you can listen to podcasts. So anything else that we want to talk about or plug before we get into the show proper?
I'll go ahead and plug my other podcast, which is called the Launch Angle Podcast, also part of the Fantrax Podcast Network. I do it with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. We're kind of a redraft style podcast with their deep analysis. So give us a listen also on the Fantrax Podcast Network on our own feed. Also give us a 5-star rate and review. And that's about it. I had a joke,
wrong.
But I forgot it, so I moved on.
That happens all the time. Ron, what are your plugs?
Well, I have started to put together a sabermetric notebook over at BigGuyFantasySports.com, and I've just kind of posted. I pick a couple different stats from the sabermetrics world, and I'm just trying to break them down a little bit to, you know, make them a little bit more user friendly as far as going into your drafts this year, and just essentially what you can kind of gather from using each stat and how it can help you draft certain positions and certain stats in your draft. So posted one on a little one on WOBA this week. So if you can go check that out, I'll be putting at least one or two more over there in the days to come. And then essentially over there as well, I'm going to start a column. I'll probably just do an article on that. It's going to be called the Dollar Bin, and I'm going to get you a couple guys in your auctions that you can get for a little bit cheaper than some of the others, but also might make up for that dollar or two bid that you throw out there and might outplay their value, such as last year, the $2 that I was able to get Robbie Ray for in an auction that I am now keeping him for a whopping $4 at the following season.
Ooh, wee. Nice.
Delightful, delightful value.
Even
delightful
I would keep indeed. Him at that price.
Right? See?
And you hate him. Spoiler alert. All right, my stuff, I'm working on my Dudes and Don'ts series over on Fantrax. Catcher is out. First base is going to be out shortly, probably by the time you're listening to this. And then I'll keep rolling through the positions as time goes on. And there's going to be some videos to go along with those that you'll also be able to find on Fantrax. And Van is hard at work, feverishly editing those videos. The poor bastard.
I have to look at your face just way too much.
That's a fate worse than death. I do apologize for that. And then on Razzball, I'm doing team previews, so you can check that out there. And if you want to know where the next big free agent is signing, just ask me who I'm writing up, because mere hours later, it is going to be that team that they sign with. It's happened with the Twins and Logan Morrison, and it also happened with the Royals and Lucas Duda. Fun times. So I think the White Sox are next. So Jake Arrieta, everybody, he's going to sign there. You heard it here first. But that's I think that's it. Go listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball as well. But with all the plugs and all that good crap out of the way, we're going to take a quick break here. And on the other side, we're going to be speaking with Al Melchior. So enjoy the show. If you be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal.
I can call you Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me Nasty. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention?
All right, and joining us now on the Nasty Cast, you know him from the Fantasy Sports Network. And, of course, he is our co-host, or co-worker, I guess I should say, at Fantrax. Now, Al Melchior, welcome back to the Nasty Cast.
And, Nate, thank you so much for having me. Really glad to be back here.
I've joined your radio program a few times since last year, and so it's nice to be able to get you back on this podcast. And we're going to talk some starting pitching today, which is very exciting. We've pretty much gone through all of the offensive spots, and so I'm just now kind of really diving into the pitchers, and so I'm interested to get the takes from all of you fine folks today. But we're going to start off with some news, and this one actually broke last week, but it was after we recorded, and so we're going to talk about it now, and that is Logan Morrison signing with the Twins, a one-year $6.5 million deal with a vesting option for a potential second year. So, Al, we'll start with you here. What do you think this does for Logan Morrison's value this year?
I think, you know, with, you know, the changes that have been made, that it's probably a slight uptick. Yeah, the Twins, you know, have got a pretty nice lineup. And I think the park factor is maybe just ever so slightly an improvement going from the Trop to Target Field. But I think it's a minimal change. But if it's a change, at least I think it is a positive one.
Oh, yes.
You almost ruined
that
the
analysis.
Lineup.
Just left you dumbfounded.
It did. Well, we established an order beforehand, and I'm not used to going second.
I actually stuck to it this time.
I was waiting for Van to chime in here, but you know what? I'm just going to give you the honors there, Van, because I don't want to gloat about my Twins too much. Everything that is coming to mind is just glowing about how they're going to win so many games this year. So I'll give you the neutral approach.
Okay, well, what I would say is that it's crazy to me that these 30 home run left-handed hitting first basemen are coming so cheap, not only in real baseball, but also in fantasy baseball. Logan Morrison at pick 299, another guy we're going to talk about here shortly. I think he's in the 400s as far as average draft position. For the Twins, I mean, why not? It didn't cost you anything, and you've now got another lefty masher. And like Al said, this is a pretty good lineup. So, I mean, he's going to get the runs and RBI opportunity. So I have no problems with this at all from any facet.
So is it me then?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay, so yeah, it's essentially what everybody else has said. I think it's worth noting that, because I was thinking about the park factor kind of factoring in there, and I mean, it wouldn't be a shock to see maybe a few less home runs, because 38 is quite a bit, but I don't think you're going to see a whole lot less. I think the park helps him out. I looked at his numbers away from the Trop and at the Trop last year. As we know, the Trop is not known for being an offensive juggernaut as far as a park. And so of his 38, he only hit 11 at the Trop. He hit 27 on the road. So I think that'll definitely help him out as far as hitting homers at Target Field. And I think it's worth noting, too, in three games that he's played at Target Field, he does have two home runs in 16 plate appearances. So he has hit a couple bombs there, and he's hitting .333 there. So even though it's a little bit of a small sample size, has had some success there in the past as well. So I think it's overall good signing, just like everybody said. And, you know, we got to talk about your boy here, Miguel Sano. I think that's kind of an insurance policy for them. But even if he is, able to move around a little bit and actually swing a bat, I think that it'll be something where they might platoon possibly, or they might put Logan Morrison at the DH. But I think I don't think in any way, shape, or form it's going to really hurt his at bats at all either.
Yeah, Lomo will be the primary DH at this point. So that sucks for both Kenny Vargas's really takes out his value into the pooper. But yeah, great signing for the Twins. Morrison, I believe in what he did last year. He got the ball up in the air a lot more. You know, he's one of sort of the air ball revolution guys, upped his fly ball rate by 12% and put up a 37% hard contact rate. So I really don't think that he will, I pretty much agree. 30 home runs, I think, is totally acceptable with maybe not the greatest batting average, but it's going to be a potent lineup there. They were over the course of the second half of the season last year, the Twins put up the second most runs in baseball behind only the Cubs. And so I would argue that this, perhaps vaults them into the top five as far as overall lineups this year from top to bottom. I think they're going to be really good. So that gives him some runs in RBI insurance. So let's move on to another, I guess, plotting first base DH type, and that is Lucas Duda, who signed with the Royals this year on just a one-year deal. So, Al, we'll kick it to you. What do you think this does for the value of Lucas Duda?
I don't think it really helps. And it's sort of asking, as compared to what? But I guess, maybe as compared to the situation that he had with the Mets, or, a situation he could have had with a different club. First of all, not a big contract at all for him, so it doesn't, kind of scream out like we're really committed to giving this guy regular playing time. I mean, he could play every day. He could be a platoon guy, or if he has a rough go, maybe he's not even close to an everyday player, and Hunter Dozier gets reps at first base. So I'm, in my own mind, I'm leaving open sort of the entire range of possibilities for Duda, and really this doesn't change a whole lot for me. I was very cautious about drafting him, not knowing where he's going, and given the situation he's in, I realized that the Royals don't have a very deep lineup, so I'm not sure there's necessarily a better situation that was out there for Duda, but it just seems like sort of a that contract is like a vote of not much confidence.
Yeah, that's for sure. I pretty much agree. I mean, it's on Fantrax is the 31st first baseman off the board. You don't have to pay very much to get his services, that's for sure. And he could be one of those guys who, again, is just around 30 home runs with pretty crappy batting average, but you know, an on-base league boost if you play in on-base leagues like I know I prefer to do. So runs in RBI definitely sucks going to the Royals, because man, I just wrote up that roster over at Razzball. I did the team preview, and of course I submitted it the night before Lucas Duda signed, so just blew everything pretty much out of the water. But that is neither here nor there. That's just a personal aggravation. But yeah, Duda, as far as the runs at RBI go, that team is just gross. That lineup is not good, and so I wouldn't expect too much there. So I wouldn't invest in him too much more highly than where he's going already as the 31st first baseman.
I think he could join Justin Bour in the 30-20 club with 30 homers and 20 RBIs. Because I don't see a whole lot going on in that lineup either. And I mean, just by default, I mean, he might be a guy that you put on your radar in a really deep league as far as he's going to get at bats. But it's not going to be a lot produced from them other than maybe a little bit of OBP and the home runs. And I'm interested to see as well, you know, with how the rest of the spring plays out with Hunter Dozier getting a little bit of PT there, just to see what he can be, because he's been one of their higher up prospects. I don't know if he's quite towards the top there, but it'll be interesting to see if he can do anything. He's and just as of note, he's hitting 200 right now. I know it's early on in the spring, but it'll be interesting to see if he comes around. But I'm not really targeting our guy Lucas Duda here in any format unless it gets extremely, extremely late.
Now, I have basically two anecdotes that I want to share here. First, friend of the podcast and neighbor of Ron, apparently, Yancey Eaton, actually posted on Twitter today. Basically, the three lines that I don't have in front of me, but it was one of these players just got 8 years and $150 million. And it had the triple slash line of, like, one of them was 244, 350, 470. The other one was 280, 350, 440. And it's, of course, Eric Hosmer versus Lucas Duda. Duda got a one-year, $5 million deal, whereas they have very similar triple slash lines. It's kind of fascinating to see just how crazily the Padres valued Lucas Duda, or Eric Hosmer. And then the other thing I want to say about Lucas Duda is, on my other podcast, which I host, called the Launch Angle Podcast with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver, Rob kind of pointed something out about platooning. A lot of people think that maybe they're going to try and platoon Lucas Duda with the Royals, but he pointed out that in the AL Central, there are really only three left-handed starters that are scheduled to get a ton of innings. I know one of them was Adalberto Mejia, one of them was Matt Boyd, and I can't even remember the third one. So I really don't think the platoon issue is going to be a problem for him. He got 491 plate appearances last year. I think he'll get right up to that. I think he'll hit 30 home runs, and I think he'll get on base at a decent clip. So if this is an OBP league, I have no problem in the world having this guy on my roster. I think he'll be fine. You're not going to treat him as your starting first baseman, but based on the cost, you're just going to have him. And I think you could do far worse.
Right. Yeah. I have rostered him as just a throw in corner infielder, a utility bat, you know, in a 15 team league. And so that's about where you're looking at with him. And as far as his platoons, like against lefties last year, he actually had a 38% hard contact rate. I was just looking at that surprised me quite a bit, because he was really bad against lefties for a very long time, and that is a very encouraging sign. So let's move on to our last bit of news here, and that is Tim Lincecum signing with the Rangers. And Al, what do you think? Is he going to the bullpen to potentially close?
Well, I think I would definitely expect him to go to the bullpen, but supposedly everything's up for grabs. He could be in that mix with eight other, 35 to 40 year old types for that fifth starter spot. I mean, they're just really collecting veterans there. So apparently he's in that mix, but he could possibly close. That makes me very sad. I like Alex Claudio a lot. And in fact, I just in a best score league on Fantrax just picked up Lincecum, and I think it was like round 34, something like that, to handcuff him with Claudio, who I already picked. So I'm prepared for that possibility. Mm-hmm. I suspect he'll probably be in middle relief.
Yeah, I would expect him to have to work his way towards the back end of that bullpen. We saw some pretty ugly things from him last year, so I would say that they probably want to make sure they know what they're doing before they put him into any kind of high leverage situations. So in most leagues, I'm probably just not worried about him. But like you said, Al, if you're in that type of league where it's a little deeper and you're just sort of handcuffing your your closer that, well, that you're hoping is closing anyway with the Rangers. Who knows what's going on there? But yeah, for most leagues, I'm not too worried about Lincecum just yet.
Yeah, and I would just tack on, you know, to just reinforce what you were just saying, Nate, that the report that I saw on MLB.com where they said that Lincecum could, you know, basically be filling any pitching role, they did say that the closer job was pretty much wide open. So, yeah, it isn't necessarily either Claudio or Lincecum.
What percentage of the show do you think we've spent the last two seasons talking about the Rangers bullpen? Like, I feel like that's all we talk about. I wish they would just freaking stop it and get somebody to win a job somewhere. I mean, I think it's intriguing. I think it's worth just kind of, I think it's kind of a fun thing to watch in the spring is how it unfolds in a real life standpoint. Fantasy standpoint, I mean, I guess he's worth a flyer later on. I mean, I was thinking of it maybe too in a holds league as well. I mean, if you have a save holds league, potentially he could help you out in one or the other, or maybe both at some point. I don't know necessarily, if I have a lot of confidence in it. I mean, he is only 32. I mean, we saw the pictures on Instagram. He's pretty jacked up. He's been taking some trips to Gainesville, it looks like. And so I think he's going to be, you know, but he is taking a 9.1 ERA from the Angels into Texas. So I'm hoping he's kind of toned that down a little bit. But the one thing I thought was kind of intriguing was when you think about these guys that have been converted starters to closers, I mean, it has happened in a couple instances. You remember Wade Davis was being groomed as a starter way back in the day, and Brad Hand more recently has had a little bit of success with it. So I don't think it's out of the question. I mean, he's still young. He's still got, I think, something left in the tank. It's just a question of what, but there are so many potential closers in that bullpen, so many arms that are there. It's just going to be fun to see how this thing unfolds.
Yeah, and you keyword there that I'm going to take away from that is fun. I have a couple different ways to look at this. We pretty much know that the Rangers aren't going to contend this year. I mean, their starting pitching staff is horrid. And, I mean, they've got a couple of guys that they're trying to convert from the bullpen, two starters with Matt Bush and Mike Minor. I don't see them competing. I think there are several teams in that division alone that are going to knock them down. So from that standpoint, you know, Tim Lincecum is maybe an exciting name for people. So they would think that, you know, if they put him in the closer role, maybe it'll put fans in the seats to an extent. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I could see that being someone's logical, you know, just the way they think about it. Performance wise, his velocity was back up. I think they said he was 91 to 93 in that showcase. He's going to be a bullpen guy because I don't think he's going to be able to maintain that as a starter. And I just don't foresee him being ultimately all that good. But I could see him helping the team as a middle reliever if they don't do that, you know, kind of fun, goofy thing where they just stick him in the closer's role. I think there are better pitchers on the staff, so I'm not really going to pay a whole lot of attention to him.
For what it's worth, I am rooting for him because he is exciting to watch. So let's move on to the bulk of the show, and which is going to be our top 50 starting pitchers. And of course, we're going to start off with ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about laser show out in Baxton, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do.
And for any new listeners out there, what we're going to be doing here is we take two different players, and they are right next to each other in average draft position according to Fantrax.com. And so we're going to basically talk these guys out and decide who we're going to draft if it came right down to it. And we're going to start off with Robbie Ray, who's got an ADP of 48 over on Fantrax, versus Carlos Martinez, who has an ADP of 51. So Al, we'll throw it to you here. Robbie Ray or Carlos Martinez?
Humidor decided this one for me. I'm going Robbie Ray. I mean, I think he's going to benefit a lot from that, to take care of part of that hard contact issue that I'm sure we've all talked about ad nauseum on our respective shows. And Carmart, I know we're going to talk about bust later on. So to just have a spoiler here, I think he's overvalued. And I worry about hard contact with him. It was a problem for Martinez last year, so Ray's going to give you more strikeouts. I think he's going to have more success in limiting the hard contact. So it's a clear edge for me to go to Robbie Ray.
Interesting. All right. I'm going to go with Ray as well, although it's definitely closer for me than it sounds like it is for you. You got to love the strikeouts with Robbie Ray. The breakout last year was real. He just tossed out that garbage changeup and started throwing a curveball that just so happened to be awesome. And he threw it 22% of the time to go along with an already great slider. Command was still bad, 3.94 walks per nine. And also, he had a 267 BABIP and a really high 84.5% strand rate. Both of those numbers should correct in a pretty big way, but Al, like you mentioned, humidor should help. And at home last year, he had a 19.7% home run per fly ball rate. So I would expect that to come down quite a bit and help out with any kind of correction in BABIP and strand rate. And a 115 whip last year, as far as, I mean, considering how many guys he walks, that's really good. So, yeah, Martinez, I think that I'm okay with him as sort of a fallback option if I just miss out on Robbie Ray. But I just, the strikeouts are so delightful with Robbie Ray that I've got to go there.
I think this is one of the harder ones we've had as far as any position that we've talked about. And I think that what decided it for me, and I'm going to go the opposite direction of you two fine, chivalrous chaps. And I'm going to go, I'm going to go Carlos Martinez, but by just a little bit. And the thing that decided it for me was a little bit with the consistency as far as when you look down his stat line throughout the years in his career. Robbie Ray's are a little bit alarming to me for the simple fact that when you look at things like his BABIP, when you look at things like his strand rate, they seem to have really jumped off the page last year. His BABIP was up from, 2015 it was 311, 2016 it was 352, last year's all the way down to 267. That's going to be awfully tough to maintain, and that 84% strand rate, as amazing as it is, that's going to be a little tough to maintain as well. And the strikeouts are the thing with him, and he had one right around the same amount of strikeouts as Carlos Martinez had, but he pitched 162 innings. Carlos pitched over 200. He pitched 205. So that tells you he's averaged more per nine. But when you look down the list at the same stats with Carlos Martinez, you look at the BABIP, it's way more consistent. It goes from 286, 284, 318 in 2015 when he got his first kind of real decent size sample in the majors with 179 innings. The strand rate is a little more consistent. It's a little bit lower. But I, like I said, I think you're kind of splitting hairs here between the two. I love both of these guys. I'd like to have either one of them on my team, but I think just the consistency that Carlos Martinez has shown so far is what decided it for me. So if I had the choice, I think I would take him just a hair over Robbie Ray. Not to say that I don't think Robbie Ray cannot have another repeat season, and that could essentially, the 2017 Robbie Ray could be the one that we continue to see, but I just need to see maybe one more consistent season at that same level or something close to that.
Kind of like Al said, with later on we're going to see some busts. You're going to see some busts from me, although it's the complete opposite. I have no interest in Robbie Ray. Even with the humidor going to help him, there are a lot of things that just scare me. The strikeouts are nice, but that's it for me. You can't walk four guys an inning and succeed. His fly ball rate is insane. So he has that 15.2% home run to fly ball rate, and maybe it comes down, but he's still going to give up a ton of home runs because he gives up a lot of fly balls. And kind of like Ron started to mention there, he's never eclipsed more than 174 innings in a season, whereas we've seen Martinez steadily increase up to the 205 last year. I'm going to go Martinez just because I think he's a far safer bet than Ray, because I expect some major regression from Ray, just because I just feel like there's a little bit of blindness going on with him, just because we really do like the strikeouts and he's kind of exciting to watch. But those home runs, the walks, it's just not a pitcher I'm going to follow in that regard.
Wow, really broad array of opinions on that. I think that's the first matchup we've had all preseason.
Indeed.
Where we've had such differing opinions. Good stuff, although we're not, well, maybe we're helping out the listeners, I guess, by not agreeing.
But what the hell do we know anyway?
Yeah, right? All right, so moving on to our second battle here in ADP Wars, we're going to go with the wily veteran John Lester at pick 102. Versus the young gun, Alex Wood, at 103. So Al, we'll throw it to you first here. Who you got, John Lester or Alex Wood?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I will give the edge to Lester here. And it has as much to do with just the pitching landscape than it has to do really with either pitcher, that I really don't know what to expect from Alex Wood. The upside is just crazy good for him. But can he stay healthy? Can he maintain his really his best numbers that he showed us the first 3 months or so of last season over a full season. I really need safety from my first two or three starters. And Lester had a bit of a down year last year. I think it's easy to kind of go with the he's in decline at this stage of his career with that narrative. But, you know, I think that the skills didn't really erode much at all. So I think Lester could have a mild bounce back. And Alex Wood, to me, is just really a wild card. So I'd go with the safer option in Lester.
I totally agree. It is interesting that Alex Wood is going to pitch exclusively out of the stretch this year. So we'll see how that works out for him. That gives me some more interest in him than I had, but I'm still not willing to invest in Wood this year. He's one of the most injury-prone pitchers out there, and there's nowhere to go but down from last year's 16-win season, 272 ERA. Velocity ticked way down over the course of the season, too. It was down 3 miles an hour by the end of the year, and his second half ERA was 389 versus a 167 in the first half. So give me the veteran Lester here, even though he's 34 years old. I feel much better expecting 175 innings from him, which is what I want out of my pitchers that, you know, I'm taking in this area. You know, and he's still going to be close to a strikeout per inning, too. Even last year, Lester's xFIP was 385, although his walks ticked up a little bit. He posted the lowest first pitch strike rate that he had since 2012 as well at 58%. I might not draft either, but between the two, I'm going to safety here. I'm going with Lester.
Yeah, as exciting as that last debate was with the variance of opinions, I have a feeling this one's going to be way more mundane because I'm going to go John Lester as well. And it's all the reasons that you guys said. And I think the main one for me was when I compare the two, I want to try to get some, you know, with my starters, I want to make sure I get guys that are actually going to start games. I don't want to be scrambling looking for guys on the waivers when I have guys that are hurt. And, you know, John Lester, he is 34 compared to Alex Wood's 27. But when you look down the list, I mean, he's durable. He's going to be there every fifth day to get the ball. He's made 30 starts every year since 2008. I mean, he's a guy that you know is going to be out there. You know you're going to get numbers from. And it kind of like what I mentioned with Robbie Ray, you kind of look at Lester's numbers a little bit in the opposite. And he tended to have a little bit higher BABIP last year than the previous year. And the strain rate was down a little bit. So those things kind of worked against him as far as you know, kind of upping that ERA a little bit over four, but he still had decent strikeout numbers. He still averaged almost a strikeout per inning. And it's just the durability with Alex Wood. I mean, I don't know. I kind of like Al said, I have no idea what he's going to be because when you look back through his career numbers, there's not a lot of consistency there. You have one really nice season in 2015. You have last year, but still only 152 innings last year. So I like the peripherals. I mean, you know, his numbers are eerily similar in the sabermetric department to Robbie Ray in a couple categories, which I thought was kind of interesting. But overall, I'm going Lester here. If I'm going to spend that pick on a guy, I know I need to get Nate. I think that 175 innings pitched number is a perfect number, and that's what I want to get out of this guy, and I just don't think you're going to get that with Alex Wood.
Yeah, this one's a perfect 4-for-4. I'm going to go John Lester. I think my biggest argument for this would be if these picks were taking place near pick, say, 200 in a draft, that's when I go Alex Wood. I go upside. But at this point in the particular pitching landscape, I'm going to stick with the safety of John Lester. He's going to get those innings. He's going to strike out nearly a batter an inning. I don't know that the ERA rebounds to, you know, elite level because the fastball is just way less than it used to be. But he's still going to strike out nearly a batter an inning. And I think we could easily see a 3.5 ERA out of this guy next year with, like we said, 175 plus innings, whereas Wood, the range of outcomes is just too high. Too damn high! So
too damn high.
I'll stick with John Lester in this one for sure.
Real quick, I got to throw in there, Nate or Van, I'm very disappointed in the fact that you picked Lester and you did not say Lester. Hardly know her.
I literally was thinking about it. I was like, you know, I could do this, but I think I'll hold off on it. And then you got it for me, though. So I'm glad you picked it up.
Well done, gentlemen. Well done.
Yes.
So moving on to hopefully a little more exciting matchup here in our third ADP Wars battle. It is going to be Lance McCullers versus Rich Hill. McCullers at 132 overall, and Rich Hill is at pick 133. So, Al, who are you going with here, McCullers or Hill?
I'm going to go McCullers. You know, talked about, well, I think all of us talked about Alex Wood just being too much risk for the ADP. Well, here's McCullers 29 spots later with, I think, even more upside than Alex Wood, more consistency, similar health history. But here's where I'm willing to take that risk, and you're going to get, I think, more, you know, for the investment at ADP of 132 than you would get for, you know, from Alex Wood if he were falling to that same level. So McCullers has ace type peripherals, tons of ground balls, lots of strikeouts. He's, I don't know if you saw his start today. He didn't throw a single curveball, so he's working on the changeup. That's a scary proposition.
Yes.
But, you know, even as is, if you just get a few more innings out of him, he's going to be, I think, much more worth the investment. The Rich Hill, who, you know, I also like a lot, but there's a ton of risk there, and I think just not quite the same degree of upside.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned McCullers' start today, because I was just perusing Twitter at some point today, and I happened upon the Twitter account of one Rob Friedman, who is at Pitching Ninja on Twitter. And if you don't follow him, then you're doing life wrong. Go follow him. And he put a GIF out there of that changeup that that Lance McCullers was tossing out there today. And it was just disgusting. So if he really has that pitch, like where it should be as a viable third option with that, those fastballs and the curveball, then McCullers could just be a huge breakout this year. So I'm going with McCullers really easily in this one. You know, if I mentioned how volatile Alex Wood is, and if there is one person who is more likely to throw less than 75 innings this year than Alex Wood, I would say that it's Rich Hill. And you have to factor in, too, like with the Dodgers, these guys are not pitching deep into games. Even if Rich Hill doesn't pile up his, you know, his pitch count early, which he does a lot, the Dodgers really showed last year that they're good with pulling their starters after five innings and just letting their bullpen go to work. So it's McCullers by a mile for me.
Well, as our boy Yancey Eaton put it, you know, last time we were talking about outfielders, you guys know that Lance McCullers is one of my pitching boyfriends. You know that I'm a big Lance McCullers guy, and so that's obviously where I'm going here. And I agree with everything that Al said. I mean, just the upside is there, the peripherals are there. He just needs to stay healthy, and he needs to cut the walks down a little bit. And you know, like you look at, he's 24. Rich Hill, the blisters, the injury list all the time. He's 37 years old. I just don't see a lot of upside there. You can't argue with what he does when he's in there, but it's just kind of like we saw with Alex Wood. It's a question of if he's going to be in there. And I think, Nate, you just said it too. Those Dodgers starters are not going to go deep into games for you because they just aren't able to. And they have a bullpen that can come in and clean up after, you know, the four or five inning starts. And so I think that it's got to be McCullers here. But like we said, cut the walks down a little bit. I like the K rate from last year from McCullers, 25%. And you can, Hill strikes out some guys too when he's in there, so you can't really shortchange him there. But it's pretty easy for me when you have these two guys lined up side by side. That's who I'm going to go with every time. And plus, too, I think I like the fact too that he ended on a high note last year, pitched pretty well in the postseason, had a few too many walks in the postseason, but was able to kind of pitch out of some jams. And once again, as long as he's healthy, I think he's the guy that you're going to get solid value out of at this point.
This one was a little trickier for me. I'm actually probably going to go Hill on this one simply because McCullers is, in my opinion, the exact same amount of health risk as Rich Hill. I mean, neither one of these guys ever throw 150 innings, so I don't think you're going to get 150 innings. Certainly the upside's going to be a little bit higher with McCullers, but kind of like what we saw last year with that horrible second half, we've seen injuries affect Lance McCullers. We have not seen any of his injuries affect Rich Hill. It's mostly like blisters and stuff like that. So when he comes in and he pitches well. So I've got that guaranteed safety. I'm not going to get innings, but when he pitches, the strikeout rate's going to be there and the good ERA is going to be there. McCullers also had a really, really tough time going the third time through a lineup. And I don't know if he ever makes it to one of those starters who can, you know, throw six innings regularly. And in this day and age, that's not fun. Hill, same deal, except the problem was he didn't get hit hard the third time through the lineup. He just threw too many pitches, so he just never made it through. I'll just take the overall safety with Hill in this one. I get the excitement over McCullers, but I'm just not that interested because I just don't think he ever meets that expectation.
If McCullers' changeup does come along, that might go a long way towards getting him through a lineup a third time. But let's move on to our final matchup here on ADP Wars. It's going to be Danny Salazar at 162 versus Michael Fulmer at pick 166. So, Al, Danny Salazar or Michael Fulmer?
Can't you ask me this like 2 weeks from now? Because you got, you know, two guys working their way back from injury. And to me, that's really, you know, I really do want to see where they're at. But obviously, you know, we've all got drafts right now. We got to decide. So I'd say as of right now, I'm a little bit more skeptical of Fulmer being able to, you know, be fully healthy this year. You just sort of bake in the health risk and inconsistency and missed time with Salazar. But he's just so great to have on your roster when he's healthy and going well. And I still hold out hope that, you know, this is going to be the time where he's going to get to 100% and he's going to find consistency. So, you know, Fulmer's a guy that I like sort of when the Salazar types with, you know, the strikeout upside, they're unavailable. And Fulmer's a little bit more of a lot more of a finesse type pitcher who could be very effective that way, again, if he's healthy. So both really risky, but I'll go with the upside of Salazar and my probably irrational hope that he's going to get it right this year.
Yeah, Fulmer for me is actually the ideal number three starting pitcher on my fantasy roster, because you know you're going to get great ratios from him. The strikeouts, you just have to keep in mind that you're going to have to make up for the lack of strikeouts with Fulmer elsewhere in your draft. So as long as you draft smart, then that's not going to hurt you too bad, and you're going to have stability with your ratios. You know, Salazar, his shoulder is already bothering him. He's questionable for opening day. You know, like you said, Fulmer is coming off surgery as well, but DeGrom, we saw Jacob DeGrom come back from that same surgery last year, and he looked really good. And so that's giving me more confidence in Fulmer than I have in Salazar. We saw, I owned Salazar in the NastyCast podcast league, I believe, last year. And that was not a fun ride, to be honest. It was the Salazar roller coaster last year. Spent some time in the bullpen, missed a good chunk of the season. I just think he's a hot mess. So I'm going with the stability of Fulmer here.
Yeah, I don't mind either one, but I'm going to give Fulmer the nod here as well. And I think Fulmer, to me, kind of feels like that safe security. He's almost kind of like your blankie when you're little. Like, you know what you're going to get from it, and, you know, it's consistent. It's always there. Salazar, like you said, Nate's kind of all over the place, and he may not even be ready for opening day and beyond that, so we don't really know. And he ended up getting stuck in the bullpen for a little while last year as well. So if you spent a high pick on him last year, it really kind of came back to bite you. But I you can't deny the strikeout numbers that are there. I mean, Salazar will strike guys out, and he did have the 4 ERA last year, so that concerns me a little bit. But I think that just with the rotation they have too, you know, it's fairly deep, and they can throw some guys, you know, that happens again, I'd hate to see him getting thrown in the bullpen again with what they have pitching in front of him. But overall, I think Fulmer's the guy. I think Fulmer's the safer bet here. And, you know, you're going to have to make up those strikeouts somewhere. But I also think that maybe Fulmer could figure out maybe how to strike out a few more guys. And then that, maybe not this season, but in the seasons to come, I think he could be a little bit more of a strikeout pitcher, but he's definitely not going to get to the level of K per nine that Salazar's giving you. But of the two here, I think I'll give the slight nod to Fulmer just because he's a safer pick.
Fulmer? Hardly know her.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm all aboard the Fulmer train. I really like him this year. He's going to be one of my guys that I target quite a bit. I think after the surgery, he's going to see a lot more success because he basically can feel his hand. Short answer is last year what happened was is the nerve displacement caused him to not be able to feel all of his fingers at all times. So I think all indications are that he's okay from that, completely healed from it, and I think that's going to make him even better this year. I think you're going to get the ERA, which is going to be really good. He's going to throw some innings, and I really do think that strikeout per inning can raise a little bit with full control and help and health. So we'll see with that. Now, that's not to say I don't like Danny Salazar. Yes, he's very frustrating, and to be honest, I could see, by the way, Lance McCullers becoming the next Danny Salazar, similar kind of stuff. The strikeouts are enticing, but can he ever throw innings? And I'm starting to believe that he cannot, but I sure hope he does because I own him in a couple of leagues.
You know, I podcast without feeling in my fingers almost exclusively, and that hasn't affected my performance at all. So, you know,
well, because you're a man, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's usually so cold in here. I podcast in an igloo if people aren't aware.
That's what pretty much everything is in North Dakota, is just igloos.
Yeah, Yancey's got his podcast shed. I've got my podcast igloo.
Well, I saw that photo that I think you retweeted it of that, like, that big mansion in Bismarck with It was like,
yeah, that, right? The Castle House.
The Castle House, yeah. So that puts it in perspective now. If you're podcasting from an igloo, I could see that would be a much nicer set of digs to do a podcast.
Yeah, I'm really trying to save up my money by living in an igloo for a couple of years. Really hoping that bad boy is still on the market in 10 years when I'm all saved up. We're going to go ahead and take a break here, boys, and come back with some bargains and busts.
Nasty.
Hey everybody, it's me, Joe Pizzapia. Baseball is back, and so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes, because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, we have returned on the nastiest of casts, and we're going to talk about some bargains here inside the top 50 starting pitchers. Al, of course, you are our guest of honor, so we'll give it to you first. What are some bargains that you're looking at pitcher this year?
Well, it's you know, feels a little silly to talk about somebody within the top 20 that's a bargain, but you know, I don't have a lot of room to maneuver here since we're talking about the top 50. So I'm going to say Chris Archer is a bargain. Because when I've been drafting and I miss out on the big four, or maybe even I miss out on the top 10, I'm happy to just let Archer fall to me, because I think he is a top 10 pitcher. You're pretty much guaranteed going to, as much as there is such a thing, going to get 200 plus innings from him, probably at least 240 strikeouts. And he looks like he's due for some BABIP and strand rate regression, and the ERA should come down. So I don't really understand exactly why he's falling towards the bottom of that cluster of pitchers that are just beyond the big four, but I don't think he really belongs at the bottom. So I think he's a bargain.
Yeah, you do have to worry about the wins a little bit now, with as much as the Rays sold up.
Winchmans.
Yeah, I know. I just had to point that out there. Like, I don't know what I'd cap him at. But yeah, I would worry about wins definitely last among all of the categories that we worry about in fantasy baseball. I've got two guys that I'm going to throw out here. One is Luis Castillo, who I'm basically treating like a cheap ace this year. He's got three pitches, sinker, slider, change. All of them are just great. 247 BABIP last year. Okay, you're going to expect that to come way up. But I'd also expect his 17% home run per fly ball rate to come down a little bit. Also, nearly 60% ground balls. That'll help keep his BABIP down as well. I expect 180, 190 innings, close to 200 strikeouts. Maybe a few walks more than you would like. But all told, I really like me some Luis Castillo this year. And then Zach Godley is the other guy that I'm going to bring up here. He's the 32nd starting pitcher off the board at 116 overall. Career best 60.8% first pitch strike rate helped his control a little bit, although I'm not sure that the 3.08 walks per nine necessarily repeats, but got his swinging strike rate way up to 13.3%, and that came off of an increased curveball usage, up 10% from 2016. Might have a high whip, but I'd bet on a strikeout per inning. And the aforementioned humidor should help it bring down that home run per fly ball rate a little bit at home, which at Chase Field was 17% last year.
So I'm going to roll with... Oh, go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just going to say, because I was going to jump in on the humidor thing. I also have Taiwan Walker listed, even though I cheated, because he's 55th right now among starters in ADP. But he had a 2.92 ERA on the road last year and a 7.3% home run to fly ball ratio. So I think you could see those numbers doubled up, home and road. And he's just outside the top 50.
There you go.
I like that. I like the Taiwan Walker there. Okay, so I'm going to throw out a guy here that has a pretty solid track record in the past. Had a pretty nasty season last year, and I think a lot of that was just due to injury. But I think at the price point that you can get him at, I think he could slot in and be a pretty reliable guy. I don't know if he'll ever get back to the big numbers that he was able to put up, but somebody that I'm targeting a little bit cheaper than he was in the past is Johnny Cueto. In a couple of leagues, I know Nate, I just got him from you in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. And
good luck with the old fart.
With the way my pitching staff shook out, I will gladly take Johnny Cueto in that league. I think he can be in line for a little bit of a bounce back. I don't know if you're going to see the sub-3 RA ever again. I don't know if you're going to see the huge numbers he was able to put up as a fantasy stud when he was. But I think he's going to be a nice value. Another guy I'm going to throw out there, too, is Jake Arrieta. And we were talking about him. We were kind of deliberating on who we were going to take in our podcast league the other night. I know that he had a little bit of a regression as far as from 2016, but still, he was pretty good last year. He's still going to be pretty good this year. I can't believe he's not signed with a team. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion that he's going to sign with Philadelphia. I'm not really sure what's taking so long, but he's a guy I think that you can get some nice value out of. And I had Castillo down as well. He's a guy that I'm very excited to be able to name as my number two starter in my 19-team Dynasty League behind one Thor Syndergaard as my 1 and 2. So I'm pretty excited about that.
This is fascinating. We've had a list of our bargains here, and I have four names that nobody mentioned. So we've actually had a bunch of different names, which is pretty cool. First one I'm going to go with is Gerrit Cole. I can't quit you, Gerrit Cole. And I'll tell you why. I'm all in on him. And just some numbers. Through his age 26 season, Cole now has a 3.5 ERA, 1.217 whip, 2.3 walks per nine, and an 8.4 K per nine. That's certainly not ace-like, though his stuff feels like it should play up better than that. Well, I'm also going to give you another pitcher through his age 26 season. His numbers are 3.92 ERA, 1.305 whip, 3.1 walk per nine, and 8.7 K per nine. So another guy that's not quite as good as Cole, but puts up some okay stuff. And that name is Max Scherzer. So this is a guy that, similar to Max Scherzer, it just feels like the stuff has not played up how it should. I don't know if that happens this year. I don't know if it happens next year, but I really do think at some point Cole is going to take that next step. And I'm not saying he's going to be the best pitcher in baseball like Max Scherzer has been, or one of, but I think he's got another level. And if it happens this year at pick 22, I think you're going to get some really good value out of it. Another guy I want to mention, Nate, your guy, Jose Berrios in Minnesota. I think he just doesn't quite get the love he should. The innings total should jump up to about 180 this year if he bumps it up a little bit more. And we could easily see a surge in strikeouts and a drop in ERA. Steamer, Zips, for whatever reason, well, they hate every pitcher, but they really do not like Jose Berrios. But he's got such good stuff that as he ages and learns control, I think he's going to get better and better and better. Again, maybe this isn't the year, but at pick 26, I think he could give you top 15 upside with a little bit of help there. And then two more names real quick. Garrett Richards at pick 44. Question is, can he throw innings? If he does, you're going to get value. And then I cheated as well with pick number 54, and that's Aaron Sanchez in Toronto. I don't know if the blisters are a chronic issue. There's no way to tell. But if they are not, I expect a return to prominence for Sanchez. I think he could get up to, 120-plus innings easily, simply because he was coming off 190 before last year. And if the strikeouts ever catch up to his stuff, I mean, he could really be a pretty good pitcher. Go check out the spin rate on his curveball. It's one of the highest on any pitch in Major League Baseball. It's fascinating to watch. But, yeah, another guy I think could certainly provide some much better value than his draft position.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Johnny Cueto dealt with a lot of blister injury issues last year as well. So if he can harness those, get those under control, then he could definitely take that step forward that Ron is hoping for. So let's turn the tables here and talk about some busts, some guys that we are definitely staying away from this year. We'll give you the honors once again. Give us some busts at inside the top 50 at starting pitcher this year.
All right, and these all will be inside the top 50 playing.
You can cheat a little bit if you want.
coloring inside the lines. So as I mentioned before, Carlos Martinez, I just think a little overvalued at 14. Just because, we've talked about pitchers like Ray, that we worry about the walks. Carlos Martinez has a little bit of a walk problem. I mean, not 4.0 per nine, but he seems to have trouble getting that ratio under 3 per nine. Doesn't really get a lot of swings on bad pitches, which is something you'd like to see from him. Would also, help the efficiency a little bit too. And I do worry that even though it was a sort of an outlier from last year, the average fly ball against him went 329 feet. That's far. That's a lot. And even at Busch Stadium, that you know, that's only going to contain so many long drives. So I do worry. And it's not a big thing, but when you're talking about pitchers in that cluster, like I was saying, from number five or six, down to the mid-teens, something like that could be a difference maker. So with him not having the pristine walk rate and not being a totally dominant strikeout pitcher either, it just seems like he's being reached for a little bit. And I think Jose Quintana is being reached for a lot. He's 20th among starters. I get there's a steadiness and safety there. I think that's a bit deceiving, though, because he's had some years, the last three or four seasons, where he's been helped out by strand rate. Last year, he had the big strikeout spike, and I don't really see where it comes from. He didn't do a significantly better job of freezing batters or getting batters to whiff or even getting foul balls. So I just think that, you had the higher ERA and the big strikeouts. And I think maybe a lot of people are projecting, oh, the ERA is going to come down and the strikeouts are here to stay. And I think it could be just the opposite. So he seems risky to me at 20th among starters. And then going down a little bit further, Gio Gonzalez at 38. That's not, the same type of investment, but I think there's going to be a lot of buyer's remorse with Gonzalez, who's just due for really big time negative BABIP and strand rate regression. And the peripherals have just been okay for quite a few years here. And if that's what you're resting on and you get the regression in terms of BABIP and strand rate, you're not going to have anything close to a top 40 pitcher.
Yeah, that's a great call there. I don't know how I missed him, but I agree wholeheartedly on that one. Although I am deeply offended that you would speak so lowly of my Jose Quintana, whom I love deeply. But it is true with Quintana that his draft price is a little steep for what you're going to get from him. I agree. I don't really know where the strikeouts came from. I would expect him to sort of return to normal. But on the other hand, he's been really consistent over the last couple of years, 2017 notwithstanding. So I would hope that he would get a little back to the consistency. That's kind of what I liked about him, is just he always gave you 200 innings. You knew what you were getting. He wasn't flashy. He was always semi-cheap. And now there's just such a lack of top-end pitching that he's getting kind of pushed up that way. So I don't necessarily love his price. But my bust this year, I'm going to start out with Justin Verlander as the 11th starting pitcher overall, 39 overall in Fantrax.com ADP. He pitched 243 innings last year. That's a lot. He's also 35 years old, and he's got over 2,500 innings on that arm. So I'm just worried about Father Time, I guess, catching up to him, and perhaps he falls off in a pretty big way this season. And this one, Van... Sorry, I've actually got Gerrit Cole on my bust list at the 22nd starting pitcher. I just feel like at that point you're paying for the bounce back, like you're paying him to take that step forward without actually seeing it. And 4.26 ERA last year. I agree that I see a better pitcher with him. He should be better than he has been, but I'm not going to pay to see him take that step forward at that price. I would rather just let somebody else invest in him. And then Marcus Stroman, and I just put him on this list mostly because of his shoulder injury that just cropped up. Could miss the start of the season. Not a huge strikeout guy. He's the 31st starting pitcher off the board right now. Doesn't really have the upside, in my opinion, to overcome the injury risk unless he just really, really falls from his current ADP. So those are my busts right there.
My main one, Al kind of took it already, and I think it's a great one, and it's Gio Gonzalez. And just I don't really know where last season kind of came from. It's very out of character for him as far as the numbers that he put up, with the ERA being so much lower, with all the peripherals being so much lower. The one thing that I did notice, though, is kind of perusing his numbers, is the fastball velocity is down about 2 miles per hour from 2016 to 2017. So it'll be interesting to see where that ends up cropping up at as the season comes up. But he's a guy that I think you can get a solid season out of. Is he going to give you something that's deserving of being the 38th pitcher off the board? I don't really know if I see that. And then a guy that I don't know necessarily, I don't really think he's fairly targeted here, I guess, is what I want to say at 46. I think he needs to go a little bit later. And that's a guy in Kansas City there, Danny Duffy. Not that I dislike Danny Duffy. I just don't think I would be targeting him there at that spot. I mean, I look across the board at the numbers. They're not bad. The ERA 3.81 last year, 130 Ks, 146 innings. He's just a guy that I don't really see too much that I like there. I mean, it's just kind of another guy. I think if I'm looking in that range, I might go down a little bit and maybe take a flyer on Aaron Sanchez or the Taiwan Walkers of the world, or maybe even go a little bit further down to 60 and look at Jacob Feria, or even a little bit lower down and you know, look at like the Patrick Corbins, the Sean Manias of the world. So I don't know necessarily if I would really target Danny Duffy right there. If I got him a little bit later, I'd probably be happy with that, but I don't think he's deserving of being the 46th pitcher off the board just yet.
Couple names for you. I had Justin Verlander on my list, so Nate, you covered that one. Robbie Ray, I talked about fairly extensively earlier. I just don't foresee even a slight repeat. I just think there's a lot of regression. Noah Syndergaard at number 7. Listen, I love Thor, but it's just too early to take him after throwing, you know, 2 innings last year. It's not going to happen. Bust is a too harsh of a word for this, but I just don't see enough innings to be valuable enough to take as the 7th pitcher overall. And then one guy I just kind of wanted to talk about, bust is a strong word, James Paxton at number 21. He's a pitcher that I really like, but a guy that I don't think will ever, ever stay healthy. I think he's constantly going to get hurt, but when he pitches, he's really, really good. He took a major step forward last year, but I don't know that I want to invest that price at this point, because I don't think you're going to get the innings out of it. If he throws 180 innings this year, I think you're going to get a hell of a bargain, because he's going to be really good. But if he throws less than 100 innings, which could viably happen, I think you're going to be hurting for this pick. So another guy that I like, but I'm probably going to avoid just because I'm going to be a little risk averse with this player.
Very good. Well, that wraps up the top 50 starting pitcher discussion. Although, just to throw one final question out there to you guys, I saw that my boy Joe Biagini, the Italian Pumpernickel, just got himself a win today in the preseason. Did any of you guys watch that at all, or have you heard anything about him this preseason?
I didn't see it, and the only thing I had heard was he was going back to the bullpen. But
no,
with Stroman hurt, you would think he'd be possibly next in line if they needed a replacement.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something to watch for that reason alone, because Stroman with a shoulder injury is enough to scare me away. I didn't even know about it until Nate mentioned it for me today, and once I saw that it was shoulder, I backed off. So if he's out for any extended period of time, I mean, the Italian Pumpernickel, that's the guy you go to, right? So something to watch, but they did say bullpen earlier, so keep an eye on that for sure.
And it seems to me like I remember him being decent. Not last year, but the year before at home as well. So he could be a nice home baked pumpernickel for you, possibly.
Perfect. All right. Al, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all your picks and pans as they were. So before we head off into the sunset here, make sure that our audience knows where to find you on social media, and go ahead and plug any work that you have coming out so we can all check it out.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Well, and I'm on board with Fantrax, as you mentioned at the top of the show. In fact, I should be having a piece on the Beat Al Melchior League. That's a draft and hold league that should be online sometime tomorrow. You can find the Fantasy Baseball Hour with Al Melchior, which, believe it or not, I'm the host of that show. and that's on Fantasy Sports Radio. And you can also download that from iTunes. And doing the occasional post over at almelker.com, although not as often as I had hoped or I had planned.
And I can't recommend your radio show enough, especially when you bring in the old CBS guys. You got Nando in there, and Adam was on the other day, and Scott White. It's just terrific, because I always loved listening to you guys all together at CBS. And so it's heartwarming to hear you guys all together in the same spot again. So thank you so much, Al, for joining us once again. Next week, we're going to be doing our live mock draft, and we will not have a special guest. So look forward to that. But until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.